Joel, could you do the timing on the next one? I'll just...
You can sit down there.
Okay.
Like... Where's the mouse? Don't see a mouse. Bad. Statistics education. I've been at this for a long time, and I've begun to wonder just how effective a person can be in bringing about change. So my question is, are we being steadfast to some principles, or are we being stubborn in resisting change? I give assertive talks, so fasten your seatbelts. First, I want to start with a survey. Have you ever taught an intro stat course where you've skipped over, number one, the difference between an experiment and an observational study? And I have, because it doesn't make any difference in any of the inference that I'm teaching. Okay? Has anybody else ever skipped over this in teaching the intro course? Ever is a big word. I see maybe between a tenth and a fifth, something like that. Okay. How about the difference about the random assignment controls for confounders? The textbook I'm using now doesn't even include this. And I've noticed there are several textbooks that don't seem to include this. Have any of you ended up skipping over that the random assignment really controls for confounders? A bit more, maybe a fifth, tenths for the first. Has anybody ever skipped the t-test? Now, this one is interesting because I never have, but in doing this paper, I've decided I'm going to. But I saw about five hands here out of 50, a tenth. Okay, let's try something else as a survey here. Have you ever taught an intro stat course where you showed that statistical significance can be tested just using the confidence intervals? Now we're beginning to get action. I see over half, I would say, certainly between a half and two-thirds, have done this. Now, some textbooks include this, some don't. Sometimes you have to add that. And there's certainly pros and cons in doing it. Number five, have you ever taught an intro stat course where you showed that statistical significance could be changed by controlling for a confounder, taking something into account? And I'm seeing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, more than I expected, 8 out of 50. Okay? Have you ever done this, showing that statistical significance could be changed by the presence of bias? You say, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, okay? About the same. Interesting. That's why I do these surveys. I'm here to learn from you, right? How about the last one? This is the Joel Vest classic, where statistical significance can be changed by redefining how a group is identified or how a quantity is measured. Anybody done that one? I see 1, 2, 3, 4 out of 50. Now, these last ones are going to become very relevant to my talk, because I'm going to use this as evidence for a very controversial claim. Onward. I'm making three claims. One, the intro stat course is the same in content, essentially, as it was 50 years ago. Now, I have a book from about 80 years ago. No inference. But by the time you move to the 50s and 60s, the books had inference. But I'm saying you could teach from one of those books with very minimal preparation. I'll argue that one. Secondly, I'm arguing that statistical education has ignored most of the content changes proposed by the leaders in statistics education. That's going to take more evidence. I'm arguing the intro stat course is essentially a math stat course. And I think if I asked for a show of hands on who would agree with that, I'd have nobody. It's like Shield. There's no calculus. This is algebra. There's no proofs. You know, you're just in the wrong ballgame. That's what I'm asserting. And these three are all tied together. And then, if these claims are true, why would these claims be true? And what does that mean for the future of statistical education? So, taking them on is 1, 2, 3. Number one, hasn't changed much in 50 years. Here's the table of contents from a psych textbook back in 1958. Descriptive statistics, inferential statistics. You're looking through and saying, I don't know that I would have done correlation or etc., but I could teach from this. The flow is the same, etc. How about a regular stat book? This was Elementary Statistics, second edition from 66. The top part, descriptive statistics, hypothesis testing, on to correlation and regression, where you're going to tie the two together. And you say, yeah, I could do that. This is not a big change. You say, well, that was a pretty low bar, Milo, to say we haven't changed. Maybe it's because we identified the truth early and we're really good at staying with our message. We're being steadfast. Let's look at some change, calls for change. 1954, Ehrenberg, UK. Statistics courses are largely irrelevant. Not just boring or technically difficult, but irrelevant. This is 1954. 1966, Wallace and Roberts. The great ideas of statistics are being lost in the sea of algebra. And they proposed in their textbook that you drop the t-test. It doesn't add to the student's understanding. It takes time away from understanding more basic concepts. And I thought, I never thought of dropping a t-test. I just felt like, to be complete, they needed to know about this extra item. Degrees of freedom equals n minus 1 and all the detail. It's like, after reading that, and this is back in 1966, 70, Selvin's saying, we ought to disallow hypothesis tests in observational studies. Has anybody ever told their students they shouldn't do hypothesis tests in observational studies? Yes, you can talk about the results being significant or not, but in an observational study, they can change if you took into account something else. This applies to the business majors, the sociology majors, the education majors, most of the people taking statistics. And then Hack argued that just do the test for proportions. That gives them the idea of hypothesis tests without taking them through all the machinery, and they can focus on their understanding. Making statistics effective in schools of business, Cryer suggested dropping hypothesis tests entirely. And Harlow, etc., said, hey, we ought to be showing effect sizes. To my knowledge, none of these has penetrated statistics education today. But these are all past. Let's move to somebody that's current. We respect David Moore. Some big ideas. The top five that I've rearranged, yeah, we take these on, teach them all the time. Three more. Observation versus experiment. Well, not really. It doesn't affect the inference. Number seven, beware the lurking variable. In most statistics textbooks, when you say association is not causation, the example that's given involves a lurking variable, confounding. But we never teach that in the entire course. We're there to talk about randomness. I've never seen a statistics textbook that used a randomness example that created a spurious correlation. We always do confounding, and then it's kind of like a bait and switch. We give a good example, get their attention, and then we substitute something else. Number eight, I didn't understand for years. I heard David give this talk in the University of Iowa. Is this the right question? It's like, I didn't know what he meant until I found in one of his other papers something on this, and I'll talk about that in the next slide. Finally, he defines statistical literacy as what every educated person should know. That's a really clear approach, but if you look in the Geis approach to statistical literacy, it's done in terms of topics, not in terms of audience. And I think that difference is critical. So I'm saying these bottom three have been, at least in part, ignored. Now, as far as what is the right question, there's one example in Concepts and Controversies on who is a smoker. And he mentions, depending on how you define smoker, you get different statistics. But it's only one small example in the entire textbook. But yet here's David Moore on the previous slide saying, we ought to be doing this and doing it a lot. Joel Best, to pick just a random person. Every statistic is socially constructed. This has got to be the most audacious claim ever made about our discipline. And when I first heard him make it, I thought, you can't be serious. Most essential? I mean, we would say an essential at least, not the essential, right? And I didn't know quite what he meant, but I kept up with it and followed, and now I believe that's true. but it's not something that you're going to see in an intro staff textbook. I'm going to come back on this one later, that seeing all statistics as being socially constructed is essential. I think this ties in with David Moore's thing on, is this the right question? Do you know really what you mean by smoker or bullying? Or what, as James said, you know, what do these units refer to in reality? Not just to spot error, but for comprehension. How did they get this big statistic? Okay, so again, Joel gave this talk 9 years ago, and I could say it's had almost no effect on anybody that I know of. Aside from me, you know, and I get off of these things. The one paper I think you should be reading this year is going to be presented at ISI in Hong Kong. And it has what I consider to be probably the most important assertion, more important than mine, for this year, that confounding and variation are the two substantial hindrances and major themes of statistical analysis. Why do I think this is so big? I'll bet I could take your statistics textbook, go to the index, and look for confounding and find nothing. Confounding is not big in intro stat. It's conspicuous by its absence, I will be arguing. And here we have the authors, George Cobb, Alan Rossman, Beth Chance, and others, giving this paper arguing the confounding, major theme of statistical analysis. But I'm going to argue that this paper will be ignored in terms of applicability to intro stats. They talk about this with respect to the post-introductory course, the second course, and almost none of my students see that course. Okay, so we're still looking at these assertions here. The first was that it hasn't changed. The second one, we're ignoring what our leaders are telling us. And I have other examples. I'm thinking of Dick sitting here in the audience, and he made a real call for, why don't statisticians get involved with the numeracy network? Can't we see a change happening, and why don't we get involved? And I'd say again, I haven't seen much response among statisticians to getting involved in that. Another example of where somebody has called for change, and yet the organization seems to ignore the call. And I'm curious about, is this true, and if so, why? My third assertion was that IntroStats is essentially a mass stat course. This has got to be the most blatantly wrong assertion you're probably going to hear at this conference. And I'm looking at math, you're dealing with certainty. Mass stat, hey, we're looking at variability. Well, just because the intro stat deals with variability doesn't make it mass stat, for God's sake. There's a lot of differences. But anytime you're making a comparison, you have to have three items. To say whether B is closer to C or far away, you have to have an A. You have to have a zero point, a reference point. What's my reference point? Well, it has to do with what I consider more essential to statistics than variability. What would be more essential to statistics than variability? The context. The context. And I feel like that's what Joel is talking about when he looks at how things are defined and how they are measured. What Jane is talking about, where did the groups come from, how was the data processed, and so forth. We tend to skip over that pretty quickly, assuming we've got subject matter experts that are taking care of that. Well, I'm going to come back to this point, and in the end, I hope I'll have given you at least some reason to think why our intro course, which I see as a research methods course, is really closer to a mass stat course than to what I consider a context-based statistics course. So, are we being stubborn or steadfast? We've ignored context. We don't really talk about what's taken into account, what's ignored, how the groups are defined, how the groups are measured. So, are we being steadfast or stubborn? Well, it depends on what we consider the center of our discipline. And John McKenzie did a survey asking statistical educators in 2004 at this meeting, what do they consider the most important concepts, the core concepts? And here I've listed some of them. But what was the most, by consensus, the most important? Variation. You say, yeah, variation, variability. And I'm saying, no. Milo, you got the data right in front of you. How can you argue with the data? Sometimes when we use words, we mean something specific. Like when I'm talking about a sample, as far as we're concerned, if it's not random, it's not worth talking about. Sample is random if we're going to have any intelligent conversation. The same way here. Variation is written this way, but we're using it in a particular way. Let's see how this comes about. So if we have variation, we can arrange it under random and systematic. We do the random side. We are aces on that. And under the systematic, we'll at least mention bias. As the speaker back there mentioned, it's something that applies to a sample. But could we apply the concept of bias to a population? Not if it's relative to the error from the sample average. It's like the sample is the population. There isn't any error of the kind we're talking about. But I think our students don't hear the word random. They don't hear the sample. They don't hear the sample average. They're thinking of anything that can influence the average for a group. And suddenly they're off into, well, what was the motive of the person collecting the data, etc. We didn't say that, but that's where our students sometimes go. So, in one sense, I'm looking at just extending the systematic side and saying, hey, we need to talk about context and confounding. We need to talk about assumptions and definitions. I think this is going to have the same result as all the other people that have tried to change statistics education. It will not succeed. Joel said that 9 years ago. I didn't believe him then. Now I'm getting closer. I did a survey in 2004 in Sweden talking about context, and I said, number one, should we be showing our students that statistical significance can be influenced by a confounder? International group, IASE, 8 agreed strongly, 7 agreed, 1 were indifferent. That's kind of a worthless question because there's no cost. So I asked the next question, should we teach it, even if it means less time for statistical significance? You can see the shift. This is the same group of people. 8 strongly agreed with number 1, nobody strongly agreed with number 2. And I thought, here is a smoking gun. Variation isn't the most important topic. It's random variation. That's what is central to our discipline. You notice that the McKinsey survey, and I didn't list all of them, confounding wasn't even one of the options in the survey. How you assembled or defined the assumptions involved in how the data was collected, it wasn't there. Maybe under data collection you could squeeze these things, but I think confounding deserves to be broken out. So my conclusion is that to be successful in changing intro statistics, any proposed change must uphold random variation and statistical significance as the core ideas. And I see that when I talk about statistical literacy and context, confounding, assembly, assumptions, people are worried that that means statistical inference won't get the billing that it should. And so there's a real reluctance to take these on, as you saw in that previous survey. So can this be done? I think so. I think we could take variation and put random at the core and talk about all the other areas. What do you control for? What did you take into account? What didn't you take into account? And how could that influence the results? The assumptions, the definitions, and so forth. The error and bias. All of these could be taught by how they influence statistical significance. And I'm doing that in my class. And my students work problems in each of these areas. So, we need to extend statistics to include these things and show how they influence statistical significance. So, can we do this? Oh, yes. Can we do it with minimal math and time? Because we don't have any time. I do it right at the end of my regular stat course because I don't want to introduce too much new material before the final. But I don't want them to go away thinking that when you have statistical significance, it's etched in stone for an observational study. So we do it all with tables and overlapping confidence intervals, which is why I was interested in the confidence intervals. And my paper will have details on what I do with my students. Let me do one example of this. Supposing men are more likely to overstate their income. Women tell the truth. And so we've got this data. The men say they're making 62 grand. The women say they're making 51 grand. We've got a difference of 11 grand. And with a decent sample, they don't overlap, and we say we've got statistical significance. But then we attach a lie detector to these guys and say, okay, now tell me. And we get the truth, but the Real data is 53,000. The difference is only 2 grand. The women were telling the truth. They overlap. We don't have statistical significance. Now, this isn't a complex problem, but students can get the idea that, yes, bias can influence statistical significance. And I think that's an important thing for them to know. I'm going to skip over the example. Well, bullying is a nice one, too. If it's only physical bullying, the boys are involved 40% of them, the girls only 10%. But if it's name-calling in addition to physical bullying, suddenly the girls are up to 40% and the guys are up to 42%. Do we have an overlap? Yes. What was statistically significant goes away once you take into account a change in definition. Okay. So my conclusions, we need to refocus our entry statistical course to include more on context. Context is what should make our course distinct from mass stat. And so we need to talk more about the assumptions, the definition, the context, the confounders, and tie that in with randomness and statistical significance. And I think if we do this, we're going to improve our student retention of big ideas, because I think they have the feeling like there's more to this story than what we're getting, but we don't know what it is. Oh, I thought I had 1 minute before. Oh, okay. It will improve their attitudes. I've noticed that a lot of people that do the SAS attitude survey before and after, they have students that see less value in the course after they take the course than they did before. And this is not the outcome we want. Okay? And I encourage you to do this for yourself, because it's a real kind of between the eyes experience. And you can come up with a lot of rationalizations, but it's not what we want. And I'm thinking that by including more on context, these are things they understand before the course. They didn't understand randomness before the course. That's new. But giving them some things they understand gives them a sense that, yeah, I can use my past knowledge more. And show, uphold the context, not just variability, is what's essential. That's the real difference between statistics and mathematics, is the context. And since this can be done with minimal math and little time, I think it wouldn't take much to tweak a course and change it over to a statistics and context course. Thank you.